David, on your travels, you've been checking in on some crop formations. Tell me about that.
Well, as I was saying before, taking a vacation after writing this book, I really wanted to visit some of these vortex formations that I've been writing about. As I was saying to you, I had this unified quantum model where I'm starting to see that geometry is what ties us all together and that real dematerialization is possible because particles are doing this all the time. Even atoms are popping in and out of this parallel reality all the time. So when I realized, well, you know, now I have a little bit of money and I have some time I can actually take a vacation, I wanted to hit off Hawaii first, and then I had already booked this trip to go see the crop circles in England.
Ah.
So I only gave myself, I kind of screwed up my booking. I didn't really think it through. I only ended up giving myself one day's full layover in L.A. before I had to turn around, get back on the plane again, and fly all the way over to London. So I got pretty jet-lagged. And I have a whole long thing that I wrote on my website, divinecosmos.com, about all that and just the personal story of the trip. And there's some wonderful and crazy stuff that happened. But the part I didn't write about that I was saving for the show is what happened with the crop circles. Now, I was traveling with this guy, Kevin Fitzgerald, who I've been working with for 8 years doing sacred tours and stuff. And he has a thick Massachusetts accent. His last name, Fitzgerald, he's actually the fifth cousin of JFK, John Fitzgerald Kennedy.
I was going to ask you that. Okay.
Yeah, he's actually JFK's fifth cousin. And so he's got this thick Boston drawl, you know. He says, we're going to see a circle every day. Every day we're here, we're going to see a circle. I'm like, oh, my God. You know, don't promise what you can't deliver. I was hoping we were just going to see one. Because here's the deal, George. We have this gigantic coach, this big bus, and I knew that these are on farms in the middle of the countryside of southern England.
Sure.
With single-lane roads that probably have gravel and potholes and gosh knows what. I mean, I was very concerned because sometimes the farmers won't let you go into these formations. We also had a full itinerary. We were supposed to see Avebury, Stonehenge, Glastonbury, and then Salisbury Cathedral. And over and above all that, there were a series of obviously fake crop circles. One of the problems that's been happening is that the real ones have generated so much interest that the fake ones are now being made in greater and greater numbers. And they go out there and they make fairly convincing looking fake crop circles. But
they're good. They're very good, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. And look, I mean, people have filmed themselves doing it, and they've taken credit for it, and you actually see the photographs of them doing all the work. That's a fact. Now, who's financing them and why might be another thing we could get into if we want to put the tinfoil hat on.
Uh-huh.
Nonetheless, to stay on the facts, you can go back to 815 A.D., if you remember Jacques Vallée, right?
Uh-huh.
Jacques Vallée wrote his book, Passport to Magonia. Well, the reason why he called it that is that one of the most interesting early UFO contactee cases comes from 815 AD, where these people in France alleged to have been abducted, and they didn't call it an abduction, they didn't say it was anything scary, by these beings that look like us that they called sylphs, S-Y-L-P-H-S. The sylphs took them on what they referred to as a cloud ship, obviously something that flies in the air,
mm-hmm.
and gave them a ride in the cosmos through outer space, told them a lot of interesting things, and brought them back and said to them, the reason why we are making these crop circles is that, you know, if you just let us do this and let us, you know, do this business that we need to do by making these crop circles, then we'll help you by making sure that your weather is good.
So it was they're not helping us.
Well, this was 1,200 years ago. So the thing that's so interesting about this is that the Archbishop of Lyon in France was the equivalent of the government back then because church and state were one. You didn't have a separation like you do now. Because remember, we're dealing with 815 A.D., so if you want to get something done, you go to the archbishop. So the farmers, well, even before we get to that point, but I'll finish that thought first, the farmers actually went to the archbishop and complained because the pagans were taking crops out of crop circles and using them for fertility rituals. So the archbishop actually had to issue an edict formally prohibiting the locals from taking out crops from crop circles. So we have a documentation that's 1,200 years ago of these crop circles forming. Now
they just want them left the way they were, I guess.
Well, the other thing that was interesting, which I was going to say before that, was that when these people came back and told their story, the villagers were going to burn them at the stake because they said, well, sylphs are demonic and you guys are now touched by the devil and this is really scary and, you know, we don't know what you're going to do to us and you might have magical powers now, so we're going to burn you alive.
Well, I could understand how people of that era could have thought that. You know, that happens.
It's a frequent mistake that they make. But
yes.
So the archbishop actually had to, even before he made this edict about crop circles, he had to issue another decree where he basically said there are no such thing as sylphs, there are no such thing as cloud ships, and there are no such thing as evil sorcerers. And it was only by his intervention that he saved these people from being burned alive.
Well, I wonder what his real thoughts were, though, personally.
Well, again, I think that given the fact that he was an archbishop, and given what we're now finding out about the lineage of information that has remained unbroken for thousands of years, I would say he knew exactly what was going on. And this gets back to a whole other subject area that I have an extensive amount of background in. And one of the things I have that gives me a leg up on other guys you might have on this show is that there are a few different factions in the world that are keeping a lot of these things secret. And I've actually managed to make connections with significantly high-ranking people in most of these factions, especially the two major ones, which you could say would be the European so-called Illuminati or Rothschild faction, and then the American-Israeli so-called Rockefeller-Bush faction.
Huh.
So I've actually spoken to people in both camps, and what you find out is that the old European royalty did inherit a prophecy that said that all these games and all this stuff that they've been doing needs to come to an end as of 2012. That's when their mission is complete. And remember, I know that to most people, what they're doing, what these planetary elites are doing, seems to be utterly insane. There doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to it.
Right.
It looks like you're basically dealing with genocidal maniacs who are salivating at the first opportunity to snuff out a human life just as easily as you and I would start the car and go drive to the store. They just don't even care about it.